Let's relieve a little physical tension with some isometric hand movements. I like to start by clenching and unclenching my hands, making menacing fists, and then releasing the tension. Open and closed. Open and closed. Acceptance. Rejection. Love. Hatred. An offer of help. Your imminent destruction. Do you like the sound of my gloves? They're made from imported panther leather. And now my left hand. Light side.
All right, that's as weird as it's going to get for the audio listeners. Let's start the show!
Welcome to Court Killers, our mission to report the intel from the front lines of the court-cutting revolution so that you, my friends, have all the information you need to be able to watch what you want, when you want, where you want, on whatever device you want. I'm Tom Merritt.
Hey, man, I'm Brian Brushwood, and more importantly, that was special correspondent Kylo Ren with an ASMR exclusive.
You know how ASMR gives some people the heebie-jeebies?
It doesn't
usually for me, but that did.
Really? Okay. Yes. By the way, there's a word for it. ASMR enthusiasts, you know, like they love the intimacy of these experiences, sure, and the way through their ears they can feel like they're there. I have the opposite. It's colloquially called misophonia, and to me it's very unpleasant. It feels overly intimate with beings and situations that I don't feel like. But Kylo Ren, here's what an idiot I am. I watched that YouTube video that was from the Aural Knots, A-U-R-A-L, and I spent the whole time seeing like, man, what footage is this from the movie where they have Kylo Ren and there's gloves. I guess maybe they green screened and did gloves. Didn't occur to me that anyone could buy a $10 Kylo Ren mask and then record whatever they want using that plugin.
Let's ask our guest, Christy Cates, Monday Music News and more, to weigh in on this. How did you feel about Kylo Ren, Christy?
Kylo Ren's just creepy all the way around, I think, in general, and that just added to the creepiness. So, yeah, I'm with Brian.
All right. Well, thanks for joining us, Christy. It's good to have you.
Thank you. I'm glad to be back, you guys. I missed you guys. It's been quite a while, I think. So,
it's been too
I'm glad
long.
To be back.
You've always been here in spirit every time we talk about the Movie Draft Minute.
That's so nice. Thank you. Even though we're failing the movie draft, it's okay, though.
It's fine. It's all good. It's fine.
Let's start off things off by checking in on the primary target. A report from TiVo shows that nearly half of pay TV subscribers are at least considering cutting the cord, and that 80% of cord cutters made the change because pay TV was too expensive. According to the survey, after price, the main reasons for cord cutting were given as availability of streaming services and the use of over-the-air antennas. Of those unsatisfied with their current pay TV service, 81.4% said it was the high price, 32.9% said it was poor customer service, and 29.9% said it was the quality of the TV service. In addition to that, Lichtman Research estimates that as of the first 3 months of 2017, Netflix now has 50.85 million U.S. subscribers. If you don't count satellite, you just count traditional cable, all cable TV outlets combined only have 48.61 million. So Netflix can legitimately say now they are bigger than cable. And just as a side note, for internet-only services, Lichtman estimates Sling TV now has 1.36 million subscribers, DirecTV Now 375,000. YouTube TV and Hulu TV hadn't launched yet in the time period that they covered with their research. So a couple of things to pick apart here, Brian. 50% also works the other way. Nearly half of pay TV subscribers are not considering cutting the cord, for instance.
Yeah. Okay. So, you know what? If you don't mind, let's do the Netflix thing first.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Let's
the
go
Netflix
with that.
Story. I feel like the natural flow of things is that Netflix is going to peak, and then we're going to see another splintering. I don't know how long Netflix is going to continue to seem like the one obvious solution for everyone, but at some point, I feel like there's going to be some high value targets that refuse to play in the Netflix ecosystem, either because it's uncooperative for media creators or whatever the reason is. I feel like somebody will have a legitimate reason, and there's going to be a Netflix killing movement, as is usually the case on these things. Is that an insane prediction Christy?
Gosh, I kind of think it is. And I mean, that's not meant with disrespect. I'm a big fan of Netflix. The two that I use the most, I was thinking about this when I was reading the article before I came on, and the two I use the most are Netflix and Amazon Prime. And I think that's because in addition to like the range of content that they have, they're doing such cool things with original content. And I don't know that that's happening a lot of other places to the quality level that they're doing with Netflix and with Amazon Prime. So maybe Amazon Prime can kind of like have a chance to chew away.
I think that's part of it. I can imagine a scenario where some alternative big player, not tiny player, but like a biggish player, offers more favorable terms either for the artist or for the viewer at home, and that people make that pivot, because you're right. Like Netflix is so cheap that it's like, well, why wouldn't you get Netflix? It's the best.
Well, and the problem is, you know, Hollywood studios are aplenty. There's lots of great directors out there. Netflix can't get them all. So if one of them turns them down, they just go to another one. But I think this is an intriguing idea, because if you look at Netflix's history, and we're going to oversimplify here when I do this, the threat to the DVD rental model was online streaming. Netflix got ahead of that and started an online streaming service way before people thought it was going to work out to anything. The threat to an online streaming service was availability. So Netflix, they launched on the Roku before it was even called the Roku, but they immediately put Netflix in as many places as they could get it so that you could get it wherever, avoided that. The next threat after that was losing access to content, having networks and production houses say, you know what, we don't want to license our shows to Netflix. We should be getting paid more money directly. And Netflix avoided that by creating original content that was high quality and compelling. And
by the way, now we're at the point of your story that we actually have a short-term memory for people who've been watching the show. Like that happened when Netflix gained stars and got the online streaming capability. A big part of all the good vibes we have about Netflix was from that brief time that for pennies on the dollar, they were able to stream stars as content. And when that ended, they were smart enough and savvy enough to make the long-term investment to create stuff, the originals like House of Cards.
Well, they also made a deal with Disney, which replaced the stars lost content with lots of really good content as well.
Sure, but there was a gap in between.
So the question is, what is the next threat? What is that next thing that could undermine Netflix that they're not preparing for? Because really, the only thing that we've seen them do is expand internationally.
You know what I think it is? And this is wild speculation on my part, which is, of course, my specialty. I think it will be the one thing that I don't think Netflix is prepared for is the emergence of a new, fundamentally different type of narrative storytelling from the traditional watch on a 16:9 screen format, by which I mean narrative experiences in VR or in ongoing, you know, there have been little dabblings of like, you know, tweet based narratives or SMS based narratives or interactive narratives or, you know, ARGs and all that stuff. I feel like something besides sitting down for an hour and a half to 2 hours and staring at a 16:9 box is on the horizon. And when it comes, I feel like there's no way for Netflix. Netflix cannot launch a VR narrative or initiative right now. It's too far outside of their core competency. And I feel like that might be what they will fail to get ahead of.
So are you saying that making it interactive is like the next step that you think is going to kind of push Netflix a bit?
So to clarify, like I am not calling the target. Like that would be a fool's errand, and there are million dollar a year consultants who claim to be able
to.
So
you heard it here today, Brian Brushwood predicting with 100% certainty.
No. But I am saying that I do foresee Netflix failing to call the next thing. And whether that thing is VR-based, whether it's interactive, whether it's a fundamentally different type of storytelling, I feel like that'll happen in the next 5 to 10 years.
So do you think they're getting complacent and they're just not on top of it like they should be? They're just kind of like, oh, we have this huge audience
When you're in Vegas and you're playing craps, you vote the come or don't come line. And I'm like saying, whatever it is Netflix is playing, I'm now moving my bet to they've won so much that I feel like the odds are they're going to miss whatever
the next thing is. They don't even need to be complacent. I mean, they have had a string of uncanny predictions. And as much as we all like to make fun of the Quickster thing, that was a minor misstep and a side note to their main strategy. Their main strategy has always been uniquely prescient about where the market was going to go next. And I don't know if I'm just forgetting or missing it, but I don't see Netflix doing anything right now but consolidating their winnings.
Also in the chat, Tensor Guy rightly points out, Brian Brushwood, host of Scam School on the Science Channel, says that that Netflix is bad.
Yeah, but if you listen to what Brian's saying, he's saying that television is going to suffer. And Netflix is going to suffer because no one's going to want to watch television.
Well, so it's not even suffer. Just fail to name the winning horse, because so far they've always named the winning horse. I'm going to say that the next two to five years, I think that there will be a surprise winner, and Netflix will not have been the one to call it.
I think you're onto something. Whether it's VR or whether it's mobile video finally, or YouTube style stuff, I think the big thing that companies never see coming is people just aren't interested in your format as much anymore. And I think the music industry ran into that a little bit, which is people were less interested in buying music because they had a lot of other things to do. Sure, piracy had an effect, but there were also just so many other things you could do on the internet. And I think everything has suffered. We have this golden age of television right now, but will that last forever? And will young people who are coming up and watching YouTube in huge numbers care about Netflix shows?
By the way, I think part of the reason I'm musing this way is because I was utterly shocked. We did, and if you didn't listen last week, the big news is that Scam School, we made two pilots. They're going to be on the Science Channel 5 days from now, Saturday morning. Please set your DVRs and make sure to watch that stuff. But we recorded a video that we posted on Friday announcing that. And I figured, you know, everybody who's a fan of Scam School would instantly be all like, yeah, hooray for Scam School. But there was a shocking number of comments that were like, why are you doing television? That's a step down. YouTube is where it's at. And I think that there's an age where it's like they grow up in that bubble and they're all like, well, obviously this is where it's at and that's old people stuff. And why would you go to old people medium? But meanwhile, by the numbers, television still dominates. Live television dominates. People still tend to watch television by and large the way they did when we were growing up in the 1980s or whatever. And so that has me thinking that there are a number of biases that even Netflix could find themselves blindsided on.
I think we're so saturated now because, like Tom was saying, there's so much of everything. I mean, right before the show, we were chatting a little bit, and I said, man, I'm behind on watching stuff. And that's because my list of stuff to watch and listen to and absorb is so gigantic now. And, you know, 5-10 years ago, we didn't have this much stuff. And stuff's a really generic word, I know. But, I mean, there's just, you know, every channel has so many interesting things to watch. Every service that we're talking about right now has so many things to offer with the new programming and old shows that you forgot about that you want to watch and films. And there's just tons of it. I think it's just, for some people, it's overwhelming. So they look at, you know, medium that they might think is less intriguing or less compelling, and they just say, oh, we're not going to bother with that one anymore.
Hey, so while I'm stirring the pot, both Tom and Christy, can I make an outlandish suggestion that you guys can correct me on? This headline reads 80% cut the cord because cable TV is simply too expensive. I believe that they believe that. I also believe that we on Cord Killers and before that Frame Rate have been through this experience earlier than everyone else. And I have come out the other side realizing that it's not the price that matters. It's the control that matters. And I think that those 80% are just wrong. Is that weird to say?
No, I mean, I think what's happening here is you're picking on DSL Report's headline creation rather than something real. DSL Reports I love DSL Reports, but they have a history of fighting the man. And so they created a headline that shows, see, those greedy cable people are getting it stuck to them. I think of the people who cut the cord, 80% of them believe they made the change because pay TV was too expensive. And I believe in a lot of cases, those are people who aren't comparing apples and apples. They're saying, I was paying $90 a month for cable TV and barely watching it. So now I'm paying for Netflix, which I was already paying for. So I just saved $90 a month. Cable TV was too expensive. It's not I can get all the same stuff for the same amount or for less money. It's I just decided I didn't want to watch their stuff anymore in a lot of cases.
So it's more value for what you're spending than it is the dollar itself?
basically. And I think what cable TV doesn't want to talk about is change of behavior. Of like, they act like, well, to replace cable, you're going to have to do all of this. And a lot of people are like, you know what? I don't think I want that anymore. I just don't want that product anymore.
Yeah, the whole traditional television cable experience. I think enough people have encountered an iOS style Apple, you know, universe kind of interface of just like, let me scroll through pictures and point at the picture I want to watch, which is just flatly not something on the menu for most cable companies, right?
Yeah. People want to look at Facebook. They want to play a mobile game. They want to watch Twitch. They want to watch YouTube. Right?
You know what they really want to do? They all want to go over and support Cord Killers by going to patreon.com/cordkillers.
Wait a minute. Hold on. I mean, how are they going to watch their YouTube videos by supporting Cord Killers at patreon.com/cordkillers?
Okay, Brian? Well, if they go to patreon.com/cordkillers, they can join the 1,723 other patrons keeping us loud, live, and independent. They'll get early access to Spoiler and Time episodes, their own blended feed that's uniquely for them. And best of all, they'll be giving value for value for the show that we've been doing for almost 3 years now. It's almost been 3 years.
And if they email us with the subject line contest, they possibly could get a free Chromecast.
That's right. We're giving away a Chromecast by a random drawing. If you're going to bother to email us at cordkillers@gmail.com with the subject line contest, not only will you be entered in the free giveaway, but also you should write down what we should watch next in our archived, what are we calling this? Our library show for Spoiler?
Yeah, our library show. We have our service level agreement to you is to watch one currently airing show and one show that is no longer in production.
That's timeless. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And so Justified is the current one. The Shield was the first. I guess The Wire was kind of a proto version.
Oh, yeah. No. The Wire was definitely one.
Yeah. So now we're getting towards the end of Justified. And we need a new one. So you can email us with a suggestion and put contest in the subject line. You might win a Chromecast. Or you can just post if you're like, I don't want a Chromecast. You can post in a thread on Patreon. And we're going to take all these suggestions from all the different places. And starting next Monday, we're going to do a tournament style set of polls so that we can narrow down what we're going to watch.
By the way, I'm so excited about that because I feel like what we should do is as if it's an actual trial. I feel like you and I should impartially get randomly assigned to one show or the other to make a case for it. Or maybe some people from the audience will send in audio or some of that.
Yeah. You're sway us. So anyway, check that out. Patreon.com/cordkillers. It's what allows us to do this show for you. Now let's move on to how to watch.
Get those emails in by Saturday. That's the deadline.
Oh, that's right. The deadline is the Saturday. Airing of the Scam School TV show. Also, set your DVRs.
Okay. Apple has hired Sony TV joint presidents Jamie Ehrlicht and Zach Van Amburg. They go everywhere together, apparently, because they're leaving Sony and they're headed to Apple. When they were at Sony, these are the guys who were overseeing the teams that brought about Breaking Bad, The Shield, Justified, Shark Tank, The Mentalist. And over at Apple, they'll both report to Eddie Q. I mean, there is not a library show that isn't The Wire that these two are not in part responsible for.
I mean, it's almost as though the hiring of this kind of talent is an implicit acknowledgement that maybe the team behind Planet of the Apes somewhat missed the mark.
Oh, I think you don't need to beat the Planet of the Apes team with that big of a stick. I think if Planet of the Apes had been super successful and we all loved it, they still hire these two, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
That's interesting. Well, settle this debate, Christy. What do you say?
I'm not sure what the debate's about exactly. I just know those guys made The Crown, and I love The Crown, so I hope they do more stuff like that. That's one of my favorite shows I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm probably wrong. It just feels to me like Planet of the Apes was heralded with a very loud megaphone and received very tepid reviews. And shortly after that, we have hiring of, you know, qualified. There's three types of talent. There's unproven talent, there's emerging talent, and then there's proven talent. The most expensive is proven talent. And that's why a lot of internet startups choose to focus on emerging talent, but this is a straight up purchase of proven talent, which is something I don't think we had gotten on the show creation side. Although we did have proven talent hosts with Planet of the Apes.
But these guys aren't showrunners. That's why I think what Apple hoped was Planet of the Apes is a huge hit. And now look, we've hired Sony's TV joint presidents, Jamie Ehrlich. It's only going to get better from here. And instead it's, wow, Planet of the Apes. Hopefully these two guys can bring together a team that'll do better shows than that. Because they're two different levels of
position. Yeah, no, you're right, because I'm ascribing intention where I have no right to. That's fair enough.
But no matter what, this means Apple wants to make high quality television shows, and they've brought in the people who know how to put together those teams.
Yeah.
So maybe they're falling into what Brian was talking about. Maybe there's another contender against Netflix. Maybe it's going to be Apple TV doing stuff.
Do you know what? That will really annoy me, because I, in my mind, there's the one given, which is Netflix is a given. And then you have two choices. You can either buy into the Apple ecosystem for the content, Netflix is only whatever it is they have at any given time, and in general, it's pretty good. But then if you want to buy a show that's not available, purchase a show for $1.99 an episode, you either have to buy in to the Amazon ecosystem or the Apple ecosystem. And there are other ones, but those are the only two that have hardware, that have partnerships and all that stuff. I'll be really annoyed if something's super good. In fact, what this reminds me of is the console wars days, where it's like, well, at Christmas, you made the mistake of asking for a Genesis instead of a Super Nintendo, so that means you don't get the Mario, whatever. Like, I'm going to be real frustrated if I'm expected to go back to the Apple ecosystem, which is exactly what they're going to go for and exactly what I'm going to experience. Now I'm mad.
I mean, yeah, Roku partners with Fandango now, which used to be MGo, but those are not the same company. Amazon has their unified store. Google does this too. They have the Google Play Store and the Android devices, but the Android devices aren't made by Google, at least not yet. There is one Android TV device that is sold by Google, but it's like the Nexus, where somebody else makes it and Google slaps their brand on it. So Apple and Amazon are unique in that way, and Amazon is available despite the fact that it makes hardware, right? I think what you're circling around realizing, Brian, here is Apple's the only one who makes hardware, has a store, and will keep its shows exclusive. You will not be able to get them outside.
I think that's what bums me out. I'm smelling that end game where it's like, of course, they're going to do this to make something that I'm going to really want, and they're going to make me get up, walk all the way across the room to a totally different box, and a password that I've forgotten, and I'm pissed off already.
Can I speculate just a little bit? Because all of Planet of the Apes and Karaoke Carpool Karaoke, are going to be through Apple Music, which is a cross-platform app.
Ooh.
It is on Android.
Ish.
Ish. Sure. But that means it could become an Android TV app, an Android tablet app. And then suddenly Apple has this cross-platform
yep.
that it can debut video on. Similar to Spotify. Spotify has video, y'all.
Like music videos or
no,
content
like
videos?
Content videos.
Yeah, originals. We if you listen to Cord Killers, they mentioned it one time.
man, I barely pay attention to that show.
I know.
Stories come in and out.
They go right through your head. No, it's a good point that Apple Music, does have an Android version. I was about to say iTunes is available on Windows, so you should be able to get this through iTunes, but it's in the Apple ecosystem only. It's not like these shows are going to be available the way Netflix shows and even some, I don't want to say that about Amazon shows. I'm curious whether that's true or not, but I know you can buy Netflix shows in other stores if you don't want to subscribe to Netflix. A lot of times that has to do with the production company owning the rights, and Netflix doesn't get a say. But I think Apple's push for this is going to be, you're going to want the TV app, and the TV app is only available on iOS and Apple TV. And that TV app is the one that says, you don't care where the shows come from. You just want to watch good shows. And so I imagine they're going to have these presidents putting together shows that would go in that TV app so it can recommend, like, hey, we see you like watching Handmaid's Tale on Hulu and House of Cards on Netflix and Silicon Valley on HBO Now. Check out this show from Apple. But you don't care where it comes from. It's just up there next to those other three shows you know you like.
Man, that sounds like the smartest move. I also it also feels very un Apple a move to make, but I don't know why. I think I just have inherent bias.
Apple's really inclusive, and I like the idea of what you're saying, Tom, but I feel like they're not going to do that because of how inclusive they like to be with their products. So
what doesn't strike you as something they would want to do? Because this is basically saying you have to have an Apple TV, an iPad, or an iPhone to watch these shows, and the rest of it is just the way the TV app works right now.
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying now. Okay. So, but you do have to have their proprietary box.
Yeah, hardware. Yeah. At some point, you have to have the hardware, right?
Yeah. And so I think this is a good question. I think Bryce brings up a really good question. Do they continue to put these out through Apple Music, which is available on more platforms, or do they put them out strictly through the TV app, which is what I'm thinking of, which is only Apple TV, iPad, and iPhone?
I mean, the traditional wisdom is to always keep your exclusives behind your hardware, curtain. But who knows? Perhaps Apple will think different.
Lee. Oh, right. No, you didn't say that.
No.
All right, let's move on and talk about what to watch in Under Surveillance. Under Surveillance. CBS Interactive's Star Trek Discovery will start airing its 15-episode first season on September 24th. Brian, we have an actual date for Star Trek Discovery. First 8 episodes run until November 5th. Then they take a holiday break, and the last 7 come back to begin streaming in January.
You know what I love, Tom, is being proven wrong. I love being surprised by quality where I expected none. And I, unfortunately, am not expecting a lot of quality. I'm sorry.
I see where you're going now. You're hoping that on September 24th, you'll be shocked.
I would love nothing more than being slapped across the face and being told to STFU and instead just Star Trek for Star Trek for the universe, STFU. I hope it's good.
Do you guys think it's not going to, are you like really worried it's not going to be good?
Yes, traditionally when the showrunner leaves, that's not great. Traditionally when they drag their feet, traditionally when the teaser is made from like just a random ass 3 minutes, maybe possibly the only 3 good minutes of the show. There's vibes, right?
I've got another one for you. Today, in an interview, a couple of the people involved in the show said, yeah, it took a long time to get together because, you know, we didn't want to skimp on things like costumes and props.
I mean, again, slap me across the face and tell me Star Trek for the universe, STFU.
But I had such hopes because of the actors in this. That's what I thought was like, Michelle Yeoh's in it and Jason Isaacs is in it. And I thought, oh, well, they're getting people that are, you know, not super huge actors, but that are really good actors to do the roles. So that 100%, is kind of what gave me hope about it, but maybe not now that what Brian's saying about some of these things I didn't know about.
I'm just going to point out a few facts, a few publicly known facts. You can make of these what you will. One is the trailer only seemed to show footage from episode 1 because we never actually saw the Star Trek Discovery ship.
Yeah.
And the way this is going to be set up is that Sinequa character moves from a previous ship captained by Michelle Yeoh's character to the Discovery. So it's very clearly that all of that footage is from the pilot. Fact number 2, the pilot is the only one of these episodes that will air on actual CBS, on actual air, and has any involvement from the CBS television shows. Fact number 3, the entire project, because it's CBS All Access, is under the auspices of CBS Interactive, not CBS Television.
Dude, Beef Viper is starting some beef in the chat saying the new Seth MacFarlane spoof looks a million times better. He's not wrong. Because it's tangible and I get it and I get the premise and I think it'll be something. I just don't know what to think about this Star Trek Discovery.
No, but now Akiva Goldsman is still attached to Star Trek Discovery. Is that correct? Am I right?
I'm going to take your word for it.
He may be a producer of it, yeah.
Yeah, well, like because the thing with him that I find is weird is he has a weird track record that's very up and down. I mean, he did Fringe. He's doing The Dark Tower. So he's at the helm of that. But then he did Batman and Robin. So, I mean, it could honestly, with him, it could go either way if you're looking at his work. It's very uneven.
Also, as somebody who I am, somebody who deeply loves the Star Trek universe, and I even more deeply love the Dark Tower universe. I am guarded about the Dark Tower as well. It is so precious to me that I am gentle baby stepping towards late August.
About the Dark Tower, Nick Arcel, the director of the Dark Tower movie, told IGN, "It is in fact a continuation. It is a canon continuation. That's exactly what we intended and what Stephen King has signed off on." So all of the people who looked at tweets from Stephen King and from the official Dark Tower and said, "Wait a minute, is this taking place after the books?" Apparently, Arcel is saying yes. And trying to explain that to those of you who haven't read the books is rife with peril and an icy road that will only slide us off into spoilers.
Yes, which is to say, like, the sensible direction is for us to not drive down the icy road. But
to just wink to people and go, "You who've read the books, you know what we mean."
But this is a really weird. This is by the way, if you haven't read the books and you don't want to know a damn thing going into it, try skipping ahead a bit. I don't know. What a curious thing, because what you want to do is satisfy my entire life. Movie versions differ from the books, and people who read the books get upset about the differences. Only in the last like half decade have we seen with like Game of Thrones and stuff this weird coexistence where it's like, okay, we're going to be a little bit different or whatever. We're getting comfortable with the idea of something being different than the book, but just as good. But in this case, it is very clear that they are preemptively saying, you who have read the books, you have wondered whether or not this is a continuation of the story. It absolutely is. And in doing so, in acknowledging that, in telling that story, in some way, it's like the Heisenberg uncertainty principle. It's causing you to know a little bit about the books, whether in some vague way.
I mean, yes and no. If you don't know the books, I think it'll be fine because it's all new. And this is where the icy road comes into play. Because if you have read the books, there are things in the trailer that you're like, wait a minute, hold on. Where's X? Why is this happening? And if it's suddenly they're saying, oh, well, this is because it takes place after the last book, you're like, ah, aha. Well, now you have a different set of expectations that I'm working from.
But it could be good too, in that it pulls people who see the series first might get pulled toward reading the book. So that also is kind of beneficial, I think.
And that happens with a lot of stuff. But that's also dangerous territory, because what if by saying that you cause some number of people to say like, oh, well, if it's a sequel to the books, I really should read the books first. I'm gonna wait and not see the movie.
Yeah. You don't. Yeah. And you notice he says continuation, not sequel. He's really trying to avoid that word, I think.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, I continue to be cautiously hopeful, not even optimistic, but hopeful.
Just hopeful. And finally, Bill Nye Saves the World, the Netflix show, got a second season. So it'll be back for season two.
Christy, how many of those did you manage to watch? I've only seen a couple of isolated segments.
Yeah, I'm the same as you. I only seen a little bit of it, but I want to watch more. I think it looks really fun and campy. It's kind of like MST3K, but with information instead of just jokes.
Yeah, it's like the invention exchange from MST3K with actual inventions.
What little I saw, and I'm not qualified, what little I saw seemed preachy, which is not a word I like to associate with my science intake content, and I need to give it a full, I need to give it a full shake.
We talked about it on the show right when it premiered.
Yeah.
I think it's preachy is a word you could describe parts of it, but there are a lot of really interesting bits and interesting segments and packages in there that are also really fascinating. So I hope season two kind of refines who they're trying to speak to and how they're trying to say what they want to say. Not that what he's saying is wrong. Global warming is real.
Sure, sure.
All these things, I agree. But
fish
it's
are
like,
more intelligent but than humans.
You
could believe Jesus Christ is the Son of God and still recognize when somebody's being preachy about it.
I thought they presented it in a fun way, though. That's what made it that's why I kind of wanted to watch more and see how, like, I haven't watched much in depth at all, so I can't really speak on how preachy it is, but it looked like it was a fun show to watch, making science fun type of thing. And that's what I was kind of hoping for when I heard it was coming out. So
they set it up at the very beginning as like, hey, this is actually not a kid's show. This is an adult show, and we're going to talk about serious issues. So it makes some of the kind of wackier stuff just feel a little off.
You know what? I think part of the reason that I was felt pushed back by the segments I saw is that thematically, it's almost identical to in the mid-2000s, he did a show called The Eyes of Nye. The idea being that, hey, early 90s, everyone was watching this Bill Nye as a kid. Now they're, you know, young or mid-20s. Let's do The Eyes of Nye. And he did a climate change episode and a bunch of other stuff. And I thought it was really good, whereas this seemed just like I don't know, like a slam dance version of The Eyes of Nye, where it's just like, now shut up and believe it. And it, like even the image you have on the screen right now, this image of the mic drop where it's relying on
I'm gonna drop some truth on you.
Yeah, exactly. Like, sure. I'm gonna tell you how it is. This is not up for debate. And
I don't know where you're getting this from. I mean, it's just called Bill Nye Saves the World. There's not hubris right there in the title or anything.
Touche, sir. Touche.
Yeah. So anyway, back for a second season. Let's actually talk about what we're watching so we can legitimately get preachy about it. Christy, what have you been looking at?
Like I said, I'm way behind on my content, but I've been kind of digging through old episodes of Star Trek Voyager. I went to see Guardians of the Galaxy 2, which I thought was awesome. And the biggest thing about it that I noticed, I mean, it wasn't as good as the first one, I don't think, but I loved the way they placed the music in it, the opening scene with Mr. Blue Sky and the fight scene with Fleetwood Mac, the Chain. And I think the song choices were perfect in it. And then the last one that I've watched just recently is a documentary called Gravity is Just a Habit. I don't know if you guys know the band OK Go. They're like a really, really innovative four-piece pop band.
Oh, yeah. Made famous really cool by their treadmill video so many years ago.
Yeah. Tons of videos. And they showed the mini documentary is about how they made their music video for a song called Upside Down and Inside Out. And it was shot in zero gravity using choreography in a Russian aircraft. And they utilized the parabolic flight path of the aircraft to do their choreography. So it's really fascinating to watch, and they went through like 21 different flights, and they all got motion sickness because they had to do all this anti-gravity stuff, and just watching them work through it and try to figure out how to do this was really fun to watch, because you could see they had an initial plan on how to do it for some of it, and then for the rest of it they got on the airplane and they're talking to the Russians who are flying the plane and the people they're working with, and the Russian gentlemen are saying, well, what do you want to do here? And they're like, we don't know because we've never done this. So we have to just try the anti-gravity and throw things around and see what happens. And it's a really fun process to watch.
Where can we see the documentary?
I believe it is on Netflix. That's where I watched it. So it might be on YouTube by now too, but that's where I watched it. You can watch the whole thing on Netflix. It's not long. It's like maybe 25 minutes long. So yeah, it's really good. Really fun to watch their process, how they put the video together. So pretty much it for me.
And of course, we've been watching Justified, which we'll talk about spoiler in time. Better Call Saul on Mondays. Anything else, Brian?
Yeah, dude. First of all, I owe a huge, huge apology. I totally flaked on getting caught up by Fargo, but luckily we're not to the season end, and I'm super excited to watch it while I'm on the road this week. But I did last night. I wanted something kind of throwaway while I was playing Hearthstone, and I went back and started rewatching all of Flight of the Conchords on HBO, and it hit me like a ton of bricks, man. That's 10 years old. 10 years ago, this summer,
you watched
premiered.
Flight of the Conchords and realized suddenly it was a nostalgia watch.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and what's funny is that's actually 10 years ago was around the time that I was, having the idea for Scam School. I had discovered Flight of the Conchords, and that was one of the first things I bonded with your wife, producer Tom of Scam School. She was excited about season 2 of Flight of the Conchords, and we bonded.
Dude, that's so funny. There are two memories of my living room in Oakland. One is sitting on the couch with Eileen watching Flight of the Conchords on HBO, and the other is Eileen in the other room editing Scam School.
That's amazing.
That's crazy that's 10 years. I just wanted to mention, I am keeping up on American Gods. I find it going really slowly. That doesn't mean it's bad. If you are enjoying the look and the feel of it, that may be great for you. I find it a little slow. I'm still watching Twin Peaks, of course, and this week's episode blew my mind. It was the Twin Peaksiest episode yet, and I'm 120% in on that show. Orphan Black came back stronger than ever. They're doing even more challenging scenes with Tatiana Maslany, who plays many characters in the show. That's blowing my mind as well. And Handmaid's Tale finale was this week and wrapped up, and I think that was an incredibly strong run of 10 episodes.
Right on, man.
What have you been on the lookout for, Bryce?
Hey, we got an email from our friend Jackie Hearn. She sent around this recommendation actually from a news story that we talked about last week. She writes, I've got a recommendation for On the Lookout, Brown Girls, the web series. The synopsis on the website browngirlswebseries.com has Brown Girls is an intimate story of the lives of two young women of color, Layla, a South Asian Pacific writer just now owning her queerness, and Patricia, a sex-positive black American musician who is struggling to commit to anything, job, art, relationships. And while the two women come from completely different backgrounds, their friendship is ultimately what they lean on to get through the messiness of their mid-20s. And it was what we talked about last week is that HBO just picked up the show, similar to Issa Rae's Insecure. And so that'll be a series on HBO soon. But right now you can watch the web series of 7 15-minute episodes online through browngirlswebseries.com, and that's on Vimeo.
Excellent. Right. Thank you, Jackie Hearn. And if you got something we should be on the lookout for, email us cordkillers@gmail.com. I realized I did something subconsciously just now. I said it was the season finale of Handmaid's Tale, and I just said American Gods was still moving kind of slow. It was also the season finale of American Gods.
Oh, whoopsie.
So I don't know. You make of that what you will. Real quickly, I mentioned that I was watching Twin Peaks and that I really loved this week's episode. And I just wanted to tell you about the other show that I'm doing with Ron Richards called Damn Fine Podcast at damnfinepodcast.com. If you're at all into Twin Peaks, we watched all season one, season two, and Fire Walk With Me, and did episodes on each and every one of them. So if you're going back and rewatching, go pick it up and you can listen to our discussions of each of those shows. We give some insight into what's happening. And of course, every week we put out a new episode right now about Twin Peaks, The Return on Showtime. This week's episode, we were lucky enough to have Daniel Abraham, one half of James S.A. Corey, on. He's a huge Twin Peaks fan. And I put the question to him if James Holden's love of coffee in The Expanse was inspired by Agent Cooper. So you have to find out the answer.
Oh, you're killing me. I'm going to have to go to damnfinepodcast.com now.
To damnfinepodcast.com. We're like the third most popular Twin Peaks podcast right now on iTunes, behind Entertainment Weekly, whom we'll never catch, and David Chen. He's only putting his out every other week.
Oh.
So get in there and subscribe and leave us some reviews on iTunes. On. All right, let's move on to the front lines.
Front lines.
The lip-syncing social video app Musical.ly, musical.ly, released its first original content to run alongside user-created videos after inking deals with Viacom, NBC Universal, and Hearst. The content is designed to be interactive, encouraging viewers to send in their own responses. 2 to 4 minute episodes air weekly from MTV, E17, and others at launch. Free to all users and no ads. Shows will be featured in Musical.ly's trending section for 24 hours after release.
You know what I'll do is I'm gonna wrangle our special correspondent, Josie Brushwood, 9 years old, is an expert in Musical.ly. So I'll ask her what she thinks. Meanwhile, Time Warner has signed a 2-year deal with Snapchat for 10 original shows a year, including scripted drama and comedies. Man, I don't know, Tom.
These two stories go together, right? It's these apps that have a niche audience and do short form content are getting big money from big networks to make original content that's short.
You know what? I wonder if these stories kind of primed me to wonder if there's some boat that Netflix is going to miss. Maybe this is it.
This could be the boat.
Yeah. What say you, Christy?
I was thinking about this. I feel like they're going to have to move fast because they're going to have a ton of content. It's kind of how I see it. It moves so fast that there always has to be something new going on or people just kind of drift away and lose interest. And I was thinking of, you guys ever heard of that kind of write a screenplay in 24 hours or write a stage play in 24 hours things?
48-hour film festivals.
Yeah, that's it. Exactly. That's what I was thinking of. And they're going to have people that can kind of work at that speed, I think, to get stuff just constantly going. If it's going to be scripted, that's going to be a challenge, I feel like, for them. Unless they have a gigantic team of writers or something, which they probably do.
I think that's part of why you see both, on all emerging platforms, you see unscripted be the early adopters because they're the ones that can pivot and shift the quickest.
And the thing about Netflix is it's not throwaway. It's not forgettable. It's library. Even if you haven't seen Narcos, you can still go back to Netflix and watch Narcos. This stuff is throwaway. It's hey, watch it now. It's 2 to 4 minutes. It may be a half hour tops on some of the Snapchat shows. Most of them are 10 minutes. You watch them and then they're gone. You're not meant to go back and find them. And the question is there room for both of those, or is one of those going to become more popular to the detriment of the app.
So they do dissolve after, what, 20? Did you say 24 hours, 36 hours?
Or at least they drop off the trending list. Yeah, my guess is there's some kind of archived experience.
Snapchat doesn't even have an archive.
Right. Yeah, so you're saying full on, they just yank them. Wow.
Yeah.
Seems like a lot Amazon of effort Prime, for that, but.
Amazon Prime Video users who add Showtime, HBO, Cinemax, and Stars will now be able to log in to the service's individual apps with their Amazon accounts.
That's really interesting because, weirdly, I think that is not Amazon trying to treat the customer. That's them trying to please the service provider, because I'll tell you this much. Part of what I love about subscribing to all these on Amazon is because everything I watch in the Amazon environment, it's very easy to unsubscribe to all of these. I don't know how easy it'll be unsubscribe if I go to the Showtime app and so on.
Yeah. And so now you get the best of both worlds. You can subscribe to it on Amazon. And by the way, it's super easy, but let's say you just want it all consolidated in one bill. You go to Amazon, you add Showtime, but you can still go to your Apple TV and log into the Showtime app.
You know, I was thinking recently about how Amazon does their whole credit thing, their gift card balance and all that stuff. And it occurred to me that if you're a teenager or a youngster who gets a $100 gift card, all of a sudden it's like, that's up to you. It's like, is that going to be 6 months of HBO and Showtime and Stars, or a year of one or the other? I don't know. I think there's a real benefit to doing it that way.
Does this affect you at all, Christy?
I think it's interesting that it's almost like a la carte. Like, you can kind of buy chunks of it, because if you know, years ago, if you bought a cable channel, you had to sign a contract to have HBO for a year at this price, or you didn't get the deal, or all those kind of things. So I think it's kind of cool. You can pick and choose in a way. I'm wondering about the interface. Like you guys were saying, how easy it's going to be to, you know, be signed into this thing and want to use this device, and it's just going to get a little awkward, I think, before it smooths over. But it could be a good thing.
Yeah. AT&T is offering two free Roku Premier boxes for new DirecTV subscribers who pay for 2 months of service up front. The Roku Premier normally is $70 and can handle 4K content, though DirecTV Now does not yet stream in 4K.
Yes. More free equipment will spike those numbers up.
I got somebody today offering me free equipment. I finally, when I bought my Jeep, whoever owned it before had prepaid for a bunch of satellite radio, and then that ran out. And so finally I bought today, and no sooner was the digital ink dry as they were offering me, like, hey man, you know, we'll give you a free top of the line $100 radio if you just subscribe.
Nice. Would this convince you to try DirecTV Now, Christy?
No. Yeah. I'd rather just buy a Roku if I want a Roku. So, yeah, no, probably not.
Android police noted that Netflix has limits on how many times you can download its shows for offline viewing. Remember, not all Netflix shows are available for offline, but many are. Combined with the fact that every download has an expiration date that requires a re-download. In other words, you usually only get like 48 hours from download to watch this. This could catch people who repeatedly run out of time to view a downloaded show or download to multiple devices. Netflix doesn't tell you what the limit is, and the Android police findings say it seems to vary by show. It's not like you can just know, like, oh, it'll always be 5.
That's pretty brilliant. I think that's a smart solution to do it. Because, of course, behind the scenes negotiations, you'll have some content providers that are very strict, and they're like,
wait, look, you think it's smart to hide from the customer how many times they can download something?
Yes, because I think the customer believes they care.
I agree
that all of us say we want to know. I think truthfully, we don't really care. I think what we want is the perception that everything's available. Sometimes it is, sometimes it isn't. I think there's what you actually want, and then there's what you say you want.
If I'm going on a plane and I don't think there's any limit, no one's told me there's a limit, I'm just going to download a bunch of stuff. I may not get to all of it. Some of it expires. Oh, well, that's weird. I didn't know there was an expiration date on it, but I guess that makes sense. I'll just download it again for the next time. Oh, I haven't got to that one yet. And then boom, the minute that I hit that video that's like, oh, sorry, you can't download this for offline viewing anymore, you've exceeded your number, I'm going to be really upset that you didn't tell me what that number was and that there was a limit.
Okay, do you care about knowing that number? Let's say the number is 8. Do you care about knowing that number before your first download? Or do you only care, yes, when it says, hey, you only have 2 more downloads left?
I want to know it before my first download.
I disagree. I only want to know when I'm almost out of downloads.
Granted, what you're saying is better than not telling me at all. But if I've downloaded it six times and it tells me, oh, suddenly you have two, I'm still going to be annoyed. Like, you didn't even tell me there was a limit before. Like, you've got to tell me up front about this stuff. You can't just pop up out of nowhere and suddenly tell me there's a limit.
But think about this in terms of a solution to a tangible problem they have. They have a patchwork quilt of all these different arrangements that limit them based on which content provider they're working with. Obviously, you get unlimited downloads for all the Netflix originals. Maybe you get a certain number of downloads for HBO or CBS-owned properties or whatever. They can burden you with a giant grid and chart and say, like, well, if it's a Jeep job, doobadoo. Like, I don't think that's a better customer experience.
As soon as I start downloading it, say you have four downloads left. You have eight downloads left.
Okay, that's insane.
And tell me as soon as I've downloaded, as Amazon does, you have 48 hours left. You have 3 days left. You have 7 days left to watch this.
You've done two things. One version is the negative version that I'm the boogeyman I'm trying to portray. The other is the optimistic version. The way you just described Amazon doing it, of only telling you in terms of the limitation as you approach it, I think is a smart way to do it.
No, and it tells you immediately. As soon as I've downloaded an Amazon show, it says you have this many days left.
Okay. I disagree. I don't want to hear that I have 17 more downloads. In no way does that enhance my experience.
How tough is it to put the number right next to the title of the show, like X show and it's six? All right.
For the record, Tom and I, different interests, different likes.
Netflix
loves nothing more than being burdened with behind the scenes information about the number of downloads.
Right. I like
the
being
moment you
with
purchase
knowing
it.
If I'm going to be cut off from something I've been paying for. Yes, okay. I do like that.
All right. Well, what's a big bummer here is that a lot of these shows are only one download, and they won't tell you until after you choose to download it.
Yeah,
and I think that is like we do have a screen. I know when I tried to use this last year when we talked about this, there was nothing like the screenshot in this Android Police article that says can be downloaded one more time. But I downloaded a bunch of stuff that I ended up cannot download offline again. And there's a whole page on the Netflix apps that say available for downloading offline, which I think would be a good way to have something on the layout with a number or something.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know.
For me personally, when I order a dish, I don't want a side order of anxiety to come along with it. I'm totally fine with only telling me, you know, when it becomes an issue.
After you can't download it anymore.
Yes, that's when it's an issue. Yeah.
I think I'd be more anxious if I really, really wanted to watch it, was looking forward to it, went to download it and didn't know. And it said, you're done. You can't watch this. And
you would be mad. I don't think you'd be anxious because up until that moment, you would have thought you would have had it in any time you
wanted.
But
then you could avoid it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm saying the customer experience. I mean, yes, it's a gambling thing. But I would say if I'm the house in this casino operation, I'm going to say more people are not going to crap out. More people are going to have an anxiety-free experience and enjoy it, then and the level of their of that sum total will be superior to the number of few people who really thought they had it and they're frustrated.
No,
to discover
I get that's
that
what you believe.
Okay. I can explain it again slower if that would be helpful. And with
hey,
more detail.
You know what? What always works psychologically is adding something to your service.
Go on.
Actually, you should go on.
I thought that was the last story. Sling TV has added the ability to protect a recording from deletions on its $5 a month, 50-hour cloud DVR service. Sling will also start showing the option to record a show from the franchise screen. From the franchise screen, not just the episode screens. And episodes from the same show will be grouped into folders on Roku and eventually on other platforms as well. The DVR is available for the Fire TV and Xbox platforms. And finally, for Fox channels are now available to record. I poked around on my Sling to find Scam School and realized that I was on the wrong plan that doesn't have the Science Channel, so I'm gonna have to find that.
I was gonna say, like, these are all great additions. These are all great improvements to the Sling DVR service. It's not perfect yet, but at least they're making it better. And then you point out the one, like, fundamental problem with Sling is you're like, oh wait, there's this fractured orange and blue plan, and I could never tell which one is
they
which.
Should do a new series called Orange is the New Blue.
All right, let's get to some dispatches from the front. Mike from South Jersey, first-time listener, long-time commenter. No, he wrote it the other way around. First-time commenter, long-time listener, says, I wanted to weigh in on the discussion around why Netflix content has such a memorable impact on the market. I believe Netflix's secret sauce is its ease of access. If you recall, right out of the gate, Netflix's streaming service was available on multiple platforms, including smartphones, tablets, smart TVs, DVD, Blu-ray players, gaming platforms, game consoles. Users, both technically savvy and not, could access Netflix's content and have a very similar experience within their comfort zone. In my opinion, this is what helped Netflix leapfrog the competition and solidify itself in the space. Even now, Netflix continues to target ease of access by integrating Netflix into cord-keeping offerings like Comcast's voice-enabled X1 platform.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Debbie writes in saying, hi guys, Debbie from Hot and Sticky San Antonio here. I'm listening to you guys talk about Katy Perry's live streaming, show 174. Feel the need to point out that Katy Perry's live stream was the same basic format as that of CBS's Big Brother. Fly on the Wall Productions, which has evolved with Big Brother, produced Katy Perry's 5-day live stream. The Big Brother live feeds are on CBS All Access, and a new cast debuts later this month.
Ah, that explains why they did such a good job with that. Christy, you didn't happen to watch any of that Katy Perry live stream, did you?
I did not. No, sorry.
It was impressive, but the fact that they got the same people who are involved in Big Brother makes a lot of sense because they were pretty seamless in switching around between all the stuff going on, and they had the fake apartment looking set that looked pretty cozy. So thank you, Debbie. That explains a lot. Michael T. wrote in and said, I wanted to update you guys on what vidangel.com is doing. If you don't remember, VidAngel is the company that it was selling you edited versions of DVDs that you own. So let's say you had an R-rated movie. You could go to VidAngel and say, you know, for a couple bucks, I would like to have a cleaned up version that I can watch with my kids. VidAngel recently released a new service that filters video content from over-the-top streaming services like Netflix and Amazon. Thanks for the podcast. I enjoy the up-to-date news on all things media-ish. So I'm curious how they're pulling this off.
Here's what I think it is, because I was thinking about this. It would be very simple to write a very small text file that says, when you hit 5 minutes 35 seconds in, skip to 6 minutes 23 seconds, and so on. And then, so if that was the vector through which you watched it, you hit play through their filter, so it's their content. All they're doing is being there over your shoulder saying, and jump, and skip this, and so on.
So they wouldn't be able to do the dub out this word in that scenario.
Correct. Which to be honest,
be able to take out a nude scene or something.
Probably puts them in a superior moral high ground insofar as they get to say, look, we are not editing, you know, we are not putting our artistic vision on your stuff at all. Your stuff is there. We are just a third party that, you know, people have trusted us to tell us which parts to skip.
They're basically fast forwarding for you, it sounds like.
That's what Brian's guessing. We don't actually know what they're doing.
Brian Cufford writes in saying, FYI, in order to watch Scam School on the Science Channel when it airs, I found that I can sign up for a free 5-day trial of PlayStation View. Unfortunately, this means I can't confirm that this will work until after Cord Killers airs. Why only 5 days? Well, because that's what they decided. But more importantly, Brian, this email reminded me that everybody who's setting your DVRs, thank you. But also, do me a favor, make sure that gets played, and hopefully you watch and enjoy it, because people don't, like, Nielsen doesn't track number of DVR recordings. It tracks number of DVR playbacks after the fact.
Keith in Kent, Washington said, Nicole Lee's complaint about not being able to change the stop time on recordings is one of my biggest pet peeves with PlayStation View. When you start a recorded show, it will ask if you want to see the DVR version or the on-demand version, and the DVR version is the only one that lets you skip commercials. However, way too often, the recorded version cuts off before the last few minutes of the show. This happens more often with certain shows, like Doctor Who and Better Call Saul. Of course, you can't fast-forward the on-demand version, so you can't jump to the end to see what you missed. As far as I can tell, there's no setting to record X minutes longer. My workaround on that, Keith, has been to make sure that I also record the show that airs after it so that I can go to the beginning of that recording, which inevitably has the last few minutes.
And meanwhile, Armando writes, Tom and Brian, was curious if you'd ever done any review of the Select TV service or discussed their future Select TV One set-top box. Their service looks like Just Watch on steroids for $2.99 a month. Could their Select TV One box be the a la carte solution Brian has longed for once ATSC 3.0 gets rolling? He gives us a link we'll put in the show notes. He says, look forward to the show. This is a, I got to tell you, it sounds like that could be the case, and from a direction that I never would have predicted. Like the idea of $2.99 for a service that straight up, all it does is act as your guide, as be like, hey, I'm your bro, I'm your guy. What do you want to see? Yeah, I could tell you where it's at. I know everything.
It's only for Windows and Mac OS, and I don't know how good it works. I'm skeptical why some of the other cord-cutting blogs out there haven't gotten around to this. It's been around for a while, so I don't think it's because they don't know about it. And the problem is you have to give them $2.99 a month if you want to find out about it. But Armando swears by it, so maybe worth checking out.
Christy, where can we see more of your beautiful, beautiful face?
Everything is under Christy Kate. So I've got Monday Music News on Diamond Club TV. That's going to be actually moving to Twitch and Diamond Club TV probably in July. And on Twitch, I have a brand new music show, which is Saturdays at 8 p.m. I perform live music, my originals that I write, and also a bunch of cover songs. So I hope you guys will come out. You can just go to twitch.tv/Christy Kate and follow, and it'll notify you when I'm performing, which right now is Saturdays, and probably be adding more days soon. And then I'm on Twitter, which is just at Christy Cates as well. If you follow me there, you can hear about all the stuff that I'm working on. So
and of course, audio listeners need to know that Christy Cates is all about the K's. Christy Cates, all with the K's.
And an I.
Christy with a K. Cates with a K.
And I. Christy with an I. IK, yes. Think of inverse kinematics if you're a 3D animator.
Yes, now you got it. Go watch her on diamondclub.tv on Saturday evenings and on Mondays right before Cord Killers, normally, when her camera cooperates, on Monday Music News. Hey, our website is cordkillers.com. Our email address is cordkillers@gmail.com. And we're live on diamondclub.tv right after Monday Music News. Mondays at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific. We'll cut your cords again next week.
Woo! Hey, guys. Tom and Brian here. We just wanted to say thank you to all of our $5 patrons who keep us loud, live, and independent. You guys make Cord Killers the production that it is.
Your name appears in the video credits and appears in our hearts. And if you'd like to become one of them or see who they are, you can go to patreon.com/cordkillers.
You'll need to do more than just go there, though. You'll have to sign up and, you know, pledge an amount. But
unless you just want to see who they are.
Well, I mean, you can gawk. That's a little creepy, isn't it?
If you want to be a gawker, let's go with you.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.